Well, howdy. We're doing a little cold opening this evening on account of the fact that both, count them both, of the machines we use in production here decided to take a powder in favor of, oh my God, really? 38 updates from Microsoft? And I guess I just, I make them, well, anyway. So they're both updating right now, and we'll just kind of talk until that is alleviated, I suppose. Yes, yes, 38 updates came through overnight from the fine folks over at Micro Hell. This is the Horn. Yes, indeed. It is, of course, the 13th day of May, 2015, and I invite you, I can't right now, but you certainly can, I invite you to head on over to headonradionetwork.com and wander into the chat room, where I have no idea who's in there, but I'll just about betcha that Sparky's in there, because it's a very rare evening that our chat room moderator Sparky isn't in there for the beginning of the program. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the standard notification applies. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And the standard notification applies that this is a listener-supported radio operation, a listener-supported broadcast effort, a listener-supported community. And, of course, that means that we don't stay on the air without your kind assistance. And we recognize, every one of us involved in the Horn recognizes the sacrifice involved, truly. So there's a tab there at headonradionetwork.com called Contribute, and there you will find a PayPal interface. The PayPal interface has some questions on it that are entirely too busybodied for my liking, but we didn't get any choice in that. It's their widget. But fortunately, some of those more intrusive questions are not required to get to the next screen. So just ignore those, the ones about, you know, Aunt Hildegard's corset size, and put in enough information to get to the next screen where you'll make your choices, credit card, cash, PayPal account, all of that stuff. It's all about getting to the next screen. If you prefer to help keep us on the air via the U.S. Postal Service, well, Boss Man Wayne certainly welcomes that, especially when there's a heads up so he can know he doesn't have to put on his spider-proof gloves when he reaches into the echo chamber. If you prefer to participate that way, you may send, well, checks and money orders made payable to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. And this evening, because of the way fundraising ran last night, this evening, fundraising stands at $325. Under any combination whatsoever. Okay? Yeah. So hopefully that will happen sooner rather than later. I prefer to be able to just do the program instead of constantly nattering away about fundraising. All right? Yeah. So that's all of that. It is, well, the laptop certainly installed updates a hell of a lot faster than the tired old production computer did. We're on update number 2 of 38 now, which really puts a little bit of a crimp in the whole Prayer Meeting Wednesday thing, because it is, in fact, Prayer Meeting Wednesday on the Horn. We'll call it the Prayer Meeting Wednesday mid-May edition, because for all intents and purposes, we are at mid-May. It appears the Minister of Music will not be making his customary appearance because he lives inside the production computer, which is still working on update 2 of 38. Yeah. Gotta love it. Working. Grinding. But But that will not utterly prevent us from reaching the glorious heights of prayer meeting Wednesday. Oh no. But before we jump into the business of the Cathedral of Common Sense, the Tabernacle of Talk, I thought we would deal with a little bit of secular information. I couldn't help noticing last night a little side conversation along the way about how, by God, TPP fast track's dead, and we're going to have us a real live genuine discussion of what's in that. No, it isn't. I was sitting in the Malloy chat room for a little bit late last night, and I kept saying, "It ain't as dead as you think it is. It's not. It'll be back." Because remember, we've been handed this line of hooey about how the Congress is gridlocked and unable to come to any kind of an agreement. Right? But that's not entirely true. Remember back when the right-wing insurgency started shutting down air traffic control towers? Remember how quickly the Congress came to an agreement about that because it directly affected the travel plans of our betters in the Congress? Yeah, they came to an agreement. Lickety-damn-split. Well, this is one of those precious little moments. I'm sure the story is populating all over the place, but in particular, I found it reported over at Politico.com, thanks to Robert up in Morgantown for calling it to my attention. You just have to... kind of chuckle a little bit, I guess, when you see something like this. Headline: Senate strikes deal to pass fast-track trade bill. And being Politico, you have to take it with a whole mountain of salt. I mean, what am I supposed to think when I go to a website that's supposedly a serious news website and there's a banner ad at the top that says, "Stand up to Obama, join Team Walker." That would be Scott Walker. Because I guess Scott is not the brightest bulb in the socket. I guess Scott thinks that he's going to run for president against the Kenyan Muslim usurper, because the Kenyan Muslim usurper will, of course, declare himself maximum dictator for life, abrogate the Constitution, and run for the forbidden third term. Stand up to Obama! Yeah, the folks over at Win the Morning Politico accepted that ad. You betcha. Delightful. But anyway, I don't think they're likely to have the gist of this particular issue wrong. This is pretty much straight up political reporting. It's not an opinion piece. And yes, fast track is alive and well in the Senate of the United States of America, because they hammered out a deal. Chinless Mitch McConnell walked over to Harry Reid and said, "Harry, you know how I slapped you around almost the entire time that you were the majority leader in the Senate, right?" And Harry said, "Yes." And Mitch McConnell said, "Well, don't make me slap you around some more, son. Because, you know, we know what stump liquor is down there in Kentucky stand. I'll have me a big swaller, and I'll knock you to the ground, and then I'll start stomping and getting serious." And so, consequently, you get, in the story by Burgess Everett, the following introductory statement. Senate leaders have reached a deal to advance President Barack Obama's trade initiative after a failed vote prompted a furious round of negotiating on Wednesday. Because it's never really dead if they don't want it to be dead. Now, you can have a procedural vote like this, and if it was something progressive people wanted, the Democrats would come skulking to the microphones and say, "Well, we certainly tried, but golly, those mean old Republicans, well, they just won't let us do anything without 60 votes. Darn it. So the bill is dead. Yeah. Not gonna be fill in the blank, food for hungry people, environmental justice. Pick one. We're not going to be able, that bill is gone, that bill is dead. The agreement would give Democrats a chance to vote on two of their trade priorities as standalone bills. They get to vote on them. Oh, isn't that sweet? They get to vote on them. The Republicans are going to let the Democrats vote on a couple of issues that are going to lose. Because Harry Reid has never really been much in the way of a leader, majority or minority. The agreement announced by Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on the Senate floor would give Democrats a chance to vote on two of their trade priorities as standalone bills in addition to the fast-track measure. Holding the additional votes would not imperil the fast-track bill, McConnell said. Republicans, pro-trade Democrats, and the president all say the Trade Promotion Authority measure, which would allow the president to expedite trade pacts through Congress, is vital for approving a huge Pacific Rim trade agreement currently being negotiated by the administration. Addison McConnell said, "We have to take some of these votes separately, or we kill the underlying legislation. It's reasonable, and I look forward to our colleagues from across the aisle joining with us." Then he slapped Harry Reid in the back of the head, and Harry said, I think we've come up with something that's fair. And here's the fun part. It's absolutely meaningless! Hence the following paragraph. Though the agreement locks in votes on worker protections, it does not lock in worker protections. Those were never going to happen in the first place in this whole damn deal. Though the agreement locks in votes on worker protections, it stops short of what Democrats were demanding on Tuesday, namely a guarantee they will become law by attaching them to the Trade Promotion Authority legislation. In other words, utterly, totally, completely, meaninglessly symbolic. Instead, and man, you gotta give credit to those Democrats in the Senate for having priorities and for really knowing how to choose the hill they want to die on. Instead, a customs enforcement bill that includes currency manipulation language and the African Growth and Opportunity Act, which provides duty-free access for sub-Saharan countries to sell many goods in the United States, will move by themselves. Move. Funny little word, move. That generally means motion, progress, going forward. Ain't gonna happen. After those are dispensed with on Thursday, that would be tomorrow, the Senate will proceed to vote to open debate on a trade assistance bill intended to help U.S. workers affected by trade agreements and the fast-track package. That vote is expected to easily succeed now that party leaders have struck agreement. It will, of course, also be utterly, absolutely, unqualifiedly meaningless. Final passage, however, won't come until next week at the earliest. Senators from both parties are sure to offer amendments to the fast-track measure and the trade assistance bill, which will take days, if not weeks, to complete. The dysfunction is thick enough to bludgeon through with the dull side of a teaspoon. Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn was right upset. You know, now that the junior senator from Texas is Senator Rafael Eduardo Cruz, he's considered the sane Texas Senator Cornyn is, when he used to be the one that was out there running around and screaming. By the way, breaking news, I suppose, of a sort. Polling data indicates that fully one-third of the citizens of Texas are convinced now that that one in their White House is going to invade Texas to establish military bases in that great state that loves freedom. Mm-hmm. This is the real knee slapper, shoot Coca-Cola through your nostrils, and it burns real bad when you do that onto the computer monitor. Speaking in regard to the vote that happened yesterday in the Senate, where we all went, "Well, look at them Democrats! Boy, I tell you, they show them Republicans something. I mean what I mean." Wednesday at the Barton Civic Center, Barton, Alabama, not too far from Cherokee, it's Wednesday night wrestling, and the guys who won Tuesday night in the blue mask will have their clocks cleaned by the guys who will win Wednesday night in the blue mask, in the red mask. It's wrestling, with special opening act, the Happy Goodman Family. Yeah. Now, Senate Majority Whip John Cornyn was downright indignant after what happened yesterday. He said, "It's not acceptable. We are not willing to change that deal. Plus, we're not willing to let Democrats run the place. They seem to think they're still in the majority and that Senator Reid is the majority leader. He is not." Democrats running the place. Senator Reid, Majority Leader. Because you might recall that back around, January 2009, a whole bunch of Republican senators and members of the House had themselves a little treason meeting, and they declared that whatever it is President Barack Obama wanted, they were damn well going to stop. And they used words like Waterloo. And this they then did, and Harry Reid was absolutely powerless to stop them. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is more of that. So they've slapped around the Democrats a little bit, just enough to let them know that they're serious. And the Democrats crying, "Please don't hurt me anymore. We love you. We're all Americans, and we all love America. Oh, don't hit me again!" Conceded, and there will be fast track. There will be fast track authority granted to President Obama to jam through the latest nightmare trade agreement. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, no agreement was made that anybody ever gets to see it until it's, you know, signed into law. GOP leaders were less interested in dealing with Reid and Schumer, and why bother? Were less interested in dealing with Reid and Schumer, and tried to strike a deal with about 15 Democrats who could support the trade bills. But finally, they were forced to deal with Reid and Schumer. "Please don't hit us some more! Oh!" Oof. Who flexed their muscles? Yeah, that's the, you know, that's the cartoon noise that gets made when the 98-pound weakling makes a big muscle, and you see the bicep pop up there, and then it goes, "Boom!" So, for any of you who still have manufacturing jobs in the United States, I would start, I'd see how I look in Walmart blue. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yesterday was described as Schumer and Reid flexing their muscles. Really? Orrin Hatch and Ron Wyden went at it for a while. "Oh, he's got him in the scissor hold. Oh, no, it's the sleeper. Oh, wrestling, wrestling, wrestling." Of course, remember, that's the trick to wrestling. At the end of it all, they turn out the lights and they clean up the fake blood and go and put on street clothes instead of the little lycra, underpants. And they all go out to dinner and have drinks together. Well, I tell you what, you really had them going last night, didn't you? Oh, you squealed so good when I got you in that hammer lock. Mm-hmm. Ron Wyden of Oregon said, "We've been working with Democrats and Republicans pretty much nonstop since yesterday. Failing on this is completely unacceptable." On the other hand, Orrin Hatch said, "I'm about ready to kill somebody. Where's Harry Reid? I need to slap him around a little bit just for sport." So, no. To anybody who has been prattling that Fast Track was dead, Fast Track is alive. Right? Now, what's interesting, and I didn't read the entire article. You can go read it for yourself over Politico. Of all the people not to reach out to for comment on this, two, and particularly one. Where was the comment from Senator Warren? Is Senator Warren happy about this? Inquiring minds, as the saying goes, want to know. And maybe at some point we will.
Waiting.
Yeah. You know how it is. And of course, that was sort of breaking news as we went to air. The other real piece of la-la is what happened over on the House side of the government of We the People, seeking to create that more perfect union. You know what happened in the general area of Philadelphia last night when an Amtrak train derailed, killed 7 people, injured many, many more? News reports indicating that the train was traveling at more than 100 miles per hour. More than 100 miles per... Well, hell, who knew Amtrak trains could even go that fast? I mean, it's not like they're quality trains such as run on the rails of Europe and Asia, or Australia for that matter. No. But it was a 50 mile an hour zone. The train was going 100 miles an hour. Here's a little bit of speculation. Why would an Amtrak train need to go 100 miles an hour in a 50 mile an hour zone? Hint, to try to make up for time lost when it was laying on a siding waiting for some freight train to pass, because that's the way it is in Amtrak. If the engineer gets behind by so much as a micro millisecond, then all the freight rail gets priority, and people have to just sort of sit there and take it. I don't know that that's what happened, but yes, we do know that the train was reportedly going more than 100 miles an hour, and you can almost hear somebody hollering, "She can't stand much more, Captain!" There's our obligatory Star Trek reference for the evening. Yeah. Well, anyway, so that's a horrible wreck. And so far, no one has hollered ISIS Bruga Bruga Bruga, which is at least, I guess, refreshing, although I must admit I have not checked Pam Geller's site to see if she's quite certain that the Muslims were the ones who derailed the train. Because, see, if the Muslims had derailed the train, then America might want to do something about it. Ditto. Go to war with a country that's never done anything to us or something, but we'd be doing something. On the other hand, because this appears to have been human error or a combination of human error and infrastructure failure, absolutely nothing is going to be done. I am just a little ray of absolute sunshine this evening. Aren't I? But really, do you harbor any notion that anything's going to be done about our crumbling rail infrastructure in this crumbling empire? I mean, what was it, a couple of weeks ago that Japan just tested its warp 2 engine for its maglev train that goes a bajillion miles an hour? Greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's where it stands. That accident happened. It was an accident, and because the tourists didn't do it, then nothing's going to happen. Actually, less than nothing is going to happen. Because, see, it just so happened that the House Appropriations Committee met this very day to discuss what? The Amtrak budget. Because, after all, the goddess of irony doesn't miss a lick and she never sleeps. So, with the spilled blood of 7 dead Amtrak passengers, including, as was noted in the news, 1 United States Naval Academy midshipman, the teabagger Republican-controlled House Appropriations Committee, including brand-new, shiny West Virginia Congressman Evan Jenkins, met today. And as it turns out, nothing happened. Now, bear in mind that one in our White House had asked for like $2.45 billion for Amtrak. And the Republicans said, he wants what? There he goes, getting uppity again. He don't know his place. And promptly cut. Even from last year's levels, cut Amtrak funding. Mm-hmm. Again, the story from Politico, because I love the way they write. Democrats attacked the Appropriations Committee's action on its $55 billion transportation and housing bill as an example of badly misplaced priorities. Democrats attacked. Steve Israel, a middle-of-the-road Democrat from New York, said, it's not just our trains. It's our bridges that are falling. It's our highways that are congested and riddled with potholes. It's our runways, our airports. We are divesting from America. And the teabagger Republican said, yeah, and? So what? Why don't y'all ask the Koch brothers real nice if they'll give you some new train tracks? Idaho representing Mike Simpson didn't take too kindly to anything that Steve Israel said, and he said, when you have no idea what caused this accident, don't use this tragedy in that way. And he was a shaking his finger at the Democrats. He's a shaking his finger. And when he said, that was beneath you. Yeah. It was a 30-21 vote in the Appropriations Committee to slash $260 million from the ordinary $1.4 billion pissant Amtrak appropriation. Democrats tried to offer amendments that would have restored the missing $260 million, but the Republicans were not having none of it because they are hell-bent on absolutely destroying this country because they hate America. They hate the United States, they hate constitutional government, and they despise everything that goes with it. Because if there's... Well, I mean, there's lots of things that the Republicans hate in the Congress, but one of the things they've hated for a long, long time is Amtrak. They didn't want passenger rail. They tried to kill it, and they've been trying to kill it ever since it was instituted. Because, see, if we can just get rid of Amtrak, that will mean there is no passenger rail anywhere in the United States. Because the freight companies don't want it either. Needle always said, while we don't know the cause of this accident, we do know that starving rail funding will not enable safer train travel. On the other hand, Mario Diaz-Balart of Florida said the crash was sad and scary. From those NTSB findings, Congress must look at what it can to avoid this from ever happening again. You know, and I'm sure Mario Diaz-Balart knows exactly what needs to be done to keep this from ever happening again. Keeping there from being passenger railroad trains. See? I mean, if you want to go somewhere in America, you can either get in a car or get on a plane. The hell's wrong with people? And remember, this whole train discussion goes all the way back to the earliest days of President Obama's administration, when he pointed out that he would like to have had a whole bunch of money to expand intercity rail. And to which Scott Walker said, you can just take your money and shove it. There was already, what was it, a Spanish outfit that was in Wisconsin, who were already making train cars in anticipation of all this, had already created, you know, job creating, had already created a bunch of jobs, and Scott Walker said, don't want the money. And so the money didn't come, and the jobs weren't created, and the ones that had been created were destroyed, and they packed up and moved on. I mean, they weren't stupid. And by the way, this is kind of humorous. We've been operating since 2013 without a law to actually allow Amtrak to exist.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Senate hasn't renewed or reauthorized that law. So don't be surprised. Don't be surprised at all. When more of these things happen. More of these things will be happening because the right wing in America wants more of these things to happen. I know that may seem cold, perhaps cruel, but it's really the only thing you can come down to understanding. If the Republicans wanted passenger rail, there would be passenger rail. Because Barack Obama's not sitting up there in our White House with his, I have my veto pen out, and I'm ready to veto any kind of railroad legislation that comes to me. No! Not at all. We used to really be a country that could get things done. A country that sent people to the moon should not be absolutely vexed by the idea of having a national passenger rail network that would be accessible, fast, and safe. But we are. Imagine, because see, one of the problems is that these Amtrak trains travel on freight rail, and freight rails are not the same as passenger rails, and all you have to do is ride them, and you'll find out the truth of that. I mean, I still remember that trip that Boss Man Wayne and I made to Chicago. We got thrown from home to Rome in that train. Bad. A couple of times thought the thing was going to derail. The cars were bottoming out on their springs. You just go, wham! If we wanted it, we might could have it. But it's pretty clear that the Republicans, and of course their owners, the Koch brothers and Sheldon Adelsons of the world, don't want it. Hell, Sheldon don't want no damn trains pulling into Las Vegas full of people with money in their pockets to lose at his crappy gambling tables every day. What kind of businessman would he be? He wants them flying in on a plane and riding out on a bus. Exactly. Hey, by the way, thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon Asa is in charge of the communion tequila here in the Cathedral of Common Sense and got us started on the plate passing this evening. We now have $300 to go in fundraising for the evening. And golly gee, it really does need to happen. Because if it doesn't, tomorrow night's fundraising goal will be $5. And then Friday night's will be $7. And that way lies no more horn. Not that I'm going on strike or anything. It just, you know, will go away for want of being able to pay the bills that keep us on the air. And when I say we and us, I don't mean me and that mouse in my pocket. I mean me, you, us, we, the people who gather together in the chat room and form together in the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for Friday on the front porch and call into the program. We, this community, this conversation, will cease to exist. So, 30 folks at $10? 3 at 100? 60 people at 5? There's a pretty big audience out there, our little Horn Family Commune congregation. Yeah. It can happen. It's just a question of whether it will. I can report happily to you that Bill Gates is... Bill Gates' updates are now done. That's inspiring. Mm-hmm. Marty pointing out, Sheldon Adelson doesn't want people leaving on a bus. He wants them so broke they'll be hitchhiking out of Vegas, if not stuck in one of the casinos washing the dishes in one of the overpriced restaurants. Now there's that, too. No, it wouldn't be prayer meeting Wednesday now that we've gotten those two big pieces of current events out of the way, and I trust we are all satisfied now that that the president's going to get his fast-track authorization, no matter how many Democrats, progressives, labor unions, justice organizations, community organizations that supported him are opposed to it. He's going to get it. And then we can flush some more American jobs down the toilet. And if you listen real hard, you'll hear some of that giant sucking sound that Ross Perot was talking about back in the early 90s. Mm-hmm. Oh, happy day, happy day. But it would not be prayer meeting Wednesday if we didn't have some prayer meeting Wednesday kind of stories, and Lord God knows we do. You want to talk about something horrifying? Apparently, former liquor supply officer Marion Robertson was under the weather today. And so, lo and behold, guess who filled in for Marion? Gordon! Yeah, he's got a boy, Gordon. In case you were trying to talk yourself into the notion that this was all going to disappear when Marion shuffled off to jump on the great big barbecue spit in hell that will be his place for all eternity. Nope. Gordon is groomed and ready. And he proved it today. We're just that close to the Antichrist raising up and going brooga, 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 and destroying the temple, the Dome of the Rock, and rebuilding the temple, and the red heifer, and the gear, and the gizmos, and the tableware, and the dinner, and the table altar linens, and all of that shit, and you know, rapture on, baby. You know how we know this? Because Gordon knows. And because Gordon has seen the signs. Yes, he has. He's seen the signs.
I recently received my... I'm trying to do this. Received my first passport and was shocked to see it has a microchip inside of it. I know it's not the mark of the beast, just more Big Brother leading up to the mark. Is it safe to have? And what information is really stored in it? Who has access? And does it have to be scanned to be activated? Good question.
And that was signed Michelle, and that was a 2L Michelle, so we know it wasn't Marcus Bachman's spouse. Michelle, before Gordon answers your question, let me simply say that I will bet every part of your question is answerable on, say, a United States Department of State website, which can explain to you why there is a microchip inside your passport. You know, because you don't want an easily counterfeitable passport, do you, Michelle, that they can just sit there in some dingy little factory in, say, Abbottabad and crank out by the thousands so that the ISIS headloppers can come over here and cut your sweet little noggin off in the middle of the night, do you? Hmm? But anyway, you give us your answer, Gordon.
I'm not familiar with this. I am familiar with the microchip that's in the, there's a global program, the United, I forgot what they call it, Global Traveler Program, where you have a card that goes along with your passport.
Man, I tell you what, Marion better live for a long, long time, because so far Gordon's just not up to the job.
And in that card is a chip, and that has a lot of information about you on that chip. And there are biometrics attached to that chip so that when you put your fingers on a scanner, it scans your fingerprints and says it's the same person. The person that's supposed to be holding this card is the same person at this booth. You have to protect that information, and the government even tells you put this in a sleeve that other scanners can't read because RFID technology can be read by anybody. So you need to be very protective of that. And that kind of information, we're going to biometrics, and we're doing that in an effort to find security. And so it's that chip along with a biometric scan. So they're either going to do an iris scan. Right now they're just doing fingerprints. Yes. Do I see it leading to another thing that's on your forehead and on your hand? You betcha.
You betcha. And thanks, of course, to our good friends at Right Wing Watch, who so often take one for the team and sit there with their ears bleeding as this ignorant palaver flows in their monitoring studios. Mm-hmm. Of course, the thing is, if that was going to be the mark of the beast or lead to the mark of the beast, I would think that the beast would have enough sense to find something a little more ubiquitous than passports, because passports are effing expensive. Yeah. and you really want something that'll apply to everybody. I mean, maybe they can get Wally World on it, right? Yeah. Prayer meeting Wednesday, brethren and sistren. Prayer meeting Wednesday. Marty asking, so they're going to try to spin the idea that microchips in passports happened after 2009? The microchip in the passport was part of Real ID back in the reign of Dim Leader. And of course it was. Don't smarten up the chumps, Marty. Let's see, what else? You remember last night we talked a little bit about the relationship between all those demonical things that the Pope at Rome is talking about in terms of the Christian necessity of not casually letting a whole chunk of the world's population starve because some Wall Street trader, commodities trader, is worried about losing a penny on his wheat futures contract. Or what he's saying about climate change. Or those defense industry people who work as in an industry of death. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mentioned that this was going to put a lot of Catholics at odds with the leader of their church. And by a lot of Catholics, I mean a lot of Republican right-wing teabagging Catholics. And along comes Cliff Kincaid, no relation. Well, fact of the matter is, he probably is some relation, but it's attenuated enough that I'm not aware of it and don't want to find out. Not going to look him up on Facebook and go, hey, cousin! No. Over at a website called Barbwire, which has been notorious in the past for some truly batshit crazy babblings. Well, Cliff Kincaid offered up an opinion piece simply titled, this would be our first hockey puck warning of the evening. Hockey puck warning. Wait a minute. Hockey puck warning. Get out the hockey puck. Go find the duct tape. Cliff Kincaid, headline, The Catholic Church Has Gone Socialist. Well, I'll tell you what, barbed wire has figured out a handy little dodge. Let's see. Under their donate button says, Keep the Wire Live. Helped the Wire Live. Barbed Wire is not NPR or PBS. We receive no government assistance. Question, is my donation tax deductible? Answer, heck no. We don't want the government telling us what we can and can't say. Do you? Man, they're good. There's a big red button. Donate via credit or debit card. Donate via check or money order. But anyway, Cliff, the Catholic Church has gone socialist. Convert to being a Baptist now. Can't you just see all those right-wing Catholics, with their rosary in one hand and the dead chicken in the other? Can't you just see them wandering in on, say, a sunny Sunday morning into a Baptist church and kind of look, where's my little font where it gets my holy water? You mean everybody just sits there? Nobody stands up and kneels and does the Sunday morning gymnastics? Where's the incense? Where's the little gong? Where's the big board? Why aren't any of the guys wearing a dress? I'm so confused.
I mean, it wasn't like I could go over to the Episcopals. They're all liberal socialists, too. Oh, my soul.
So, here we go. The editors at Barbed Wire said, since we published our article, Catholic Church Captured by Progressive Forces, it is starting to dawn on many in and out of the media that Pope Francis has come down on the side of the progressive and even Marxist forces in the world today. Enter Cliff Kincaid.
The evidence is getting too big for the major media to ignore. The Pope has made common cause with the forces of international Marxism, which are associated with atheism, the suppression of traditional Christianity, and the persecution and murder of Christians. Ouch.
Now let's just sort of slow down a minute and peel that one. Peel it back a little bit. Yeah. The Pope of the head of the largest single Christian denomination in the world has decided to get in bed with people who persecute and murder Christians. I know. I didn't say it was going to be easy. I mean, that's kind of like, oh, I don't know, rock and rollers for country music. Vegetarians for CAFOs.
Conservative Catholics and many others are terrified of what is to come. Some fear that the Roman Catholic Church has joined the campaign for a global socialist state that could turn into an anti-Christian tyranny. Dr. Timothy Ball, author of The Deliberate Corruption of Climate Science, told me during a recent interview, I think the Catholic Church is regretting making him the Pope. They did it because the previous Pope was starting to deal with the problems of pedophilia and corruption in the money in the church, so the powerful cardinals pushed him aside.
Apparently, Dr. Timothy Ball did not notice that this particular pontiff is taking anything relating to the Vatican Bank up. Well, I mean, he's dialed it up to 11 and is cleaning house on the financial scandal. And he has quietly gone about the business of removing some rather of the nastier enablers and cover-uppers of pedophilia from their positions, from their bishoprics.
It wasn't a health matter at all that Benedict stepped aside. He just realized he couldn't beat them. Francis is bringing in these socialist ideas. He's already expressed some of them about inequalities of wealth, redistributing the wealth, which are themes you've heard from Obama.
Isn't that just charming? Apparently no one has, the guy with the Thorazine dart and the little blowgun has not caught up with Cliff Kincaid yet. And then he went off on liberation theology, which was one of the more redeeming aspects of Roman Catholicism and had been brutally suppressed by John Paul II, who had ugly, ugly, ugly fascist leanings.
In a matter of months, Pope Francis has announced a desire to quickly beatify a deceased liberation theologist bishop reconciled with a Sandinista activist priest who once called Ronald Reagan a butcher.
Well, I guess that should him beyond the pale of anything of the salvation of Christ Jesus, right?
Sure.
I mean, after all, it's not like Ronald Reagan was really a butcher or anything, except when he was, which was always. El Salvador? death squads? Anybody? Bueller? Yeah.
And an international outlaw, and it, that's what, really? A butcher? He called him a butcher and an international outlaw? Whatever for? For funding the Contras, who were nothing more than roving countryside right-wing death squads? Right-wing death squads in El Salvador? The right-wing murderers who murdered nuns on a whim? I mean, why would you ever call Ronald Reagan a butcher and an international outlaw over something as piddling as that? And Francis even invited the founder of the Liberation Theology Movement, Reverend Gustavo Gutierrez, to speak on the need for a poor church for the poor at an official Vatican event this week. The nerve of him! Wanting the Catholic Church to pay attention to the poor. I mean, didn't Jesus talk enough about the poor? That's all, and every time, hey Jesus, how are you this morning? Quit shitting on the poor! I mean, it got to where people didn't want to invite Jesus to parties anymore. So there's lots of business about the poor in the Gospels, and that's enough. I mean, isn't it about time the church paid attention to the people who really matter, the rich? I mean, that's not the poor building those cathedrals now, was it?
Francis received Gutierrez, considered the father of liberation theology, in September 2013. But in a private audience without photos. Then, on November 22, 2014, at the end of an audience granted to the participants of the National Missionary Congress of Italy, Francis warmly greeted him personally. Gutierrez, a Peruvian theologian and Dominican priest, is being welcomed as an official guest at the Vatican to participate in this week's Caritas Internationalist General Assembly, whose theme is One Human Family, Caring for Creation. Disgusting. The Francis Marxist Alliance seems to confirm the predictions of the late Vatican insider Malachi Martin, who wrote penetrating books, thank you, Goddess of Irony, about the Catholic Church entitled The Jesuits and the Keys of This Blood. Martin believed that Mikhail Gorbachev, who presided over the restructuring of the old Soviet Union, never gave up on Marxism-Leninism, but adopted the viewpoint of the Italian communist Antonio Gramsci, that a worldwide communist state could only be achieved gradually, used to be a revolution by infiltration. The most powerful religious orders of the Roman Church, Jesuits, Dominicans, Franciscans, Marinolers, all committed themselves to liberation theology. Well, that's a whole bunch of paragraphs of pure non sequiturs. One of the speakers at this week's Vatican Conference is Jeffrey Sachs of the UN's Millennium Project, an advocate of a global tax that could impose a cost of $845 billion on the U.S. alone. Sachs is speaking at a panel discussion on growing inequalities, a challenge for the one human family. The Pope's left-wing supporters at the Catholic Climate Covenant are ecstatic over his upcoming encyclical on ecology and climate change and believe it can be the catalyst for the deliberate transformation. Dan Misla of the Catholic Climate Covenant tells his supporters that his group is creating what he calls an educational, inspirational video on how to stop global warming and developing new programs to help Catholics reduce their carbon footprint. That's just nasty. Note coming in from Steve in China. He says, I'll passport on this. I seem to recall when receiving my latest passport back in August 2005 that it was being issued as one of the last of the old chipless versions. The new ones were being phased in sometime around the latter part of the year. Of course, it's quite possible that they embedded a secret chip into mine. Anyway, I'll bet you woke up and nothing. I'll bet you woke up the next morning after you got that passport, Steve, and nothing felt at all out of place. That's the way they want you to think. Sure, a third of Texans may think Barack Obama wants to invade Texas, but what about the other two-thirds? What about those quislings? What about those people who will sit idly by as the blue-helmeted troops march through downtown Amarillo? Irish Dave. Now, wait just a darn minute. Didn't they love them some sacks when he was giving them godless Ruskies some of that economic shock therapy? Right. Yeah, I don't know how it is that they think the Catholic Church can get in bed with Marxists and Leninists. Everybody knows that the Catholic priests only get in bed with little boys. All right, so that's the end of the filibuster here, end of the lesson. We will open, because other churches don't do this, but we will. If you want to, you can't talk back in other churches, but you can hear. And so both phone lines are, well, one phone line's open. The Gizmo line, 304-663-4676. And you're welcome to participate as you see fit. And we will take a break. Oh, thank you to Glenn. Thank you to Glenn, who has taken us down to only $290 to go in this evening's fundraising drive, goal, what have you. It is much appreciated, Glenn. Thank you. I hope you get some company this evening. Indeed, I do. And so there's the other line with someone on it now. A little break, and then the conversation will begin. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Just can't recall. it doesn't matter at all.
Again, courtesy of our buddy Greg in San Diego, a little selection from Emerson, Lake, and Palmer, From the Beginning. Thank you, Greg. Thank you very kindly. Greg has some real compiling skills. Let's run over to the Skype line, otherwise known as Harold, and I suspect we have Flavio. Hey, Flavio.
I can't hear a thing. Can you up the volume on your phone line?
It's probably not on this end, Flavio.
Hello?
All right, let's try the Gizmo line. Jim Denver is on the line. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
So many things to talk about, but, that fast track, has it definitely gone through yet? Not yet. You see it going through. Is that what you were saying?
It will. It will. It was, yeah. There was a total capitulation on the part of, Harry Reid, so it'll happen. Harry Reid capitulates like a real pro.
Yeah. I mean, that's just so wrong.
I guess they showed that Elizabeth Warren. They taught her about getting all uppity and acting like she's got anything to say.
Acting like she's a senator or something like that. What's up with her? That trade, I mean, this is like the third trade deal. We're going back to Clinton. You know, Sigwilly with the first. Everyone has just destroyed the economy for the working class. I can't understand why more people can't see that. You know, I mean, maybe Bernie Sanders can, you know, somehow win the election and change things, but unless he gets the majority of like-minded Democrats and independents like him, you're just going to be stuck in quagmire. And, you know, and even you're just going to get the Senate unless it's a big, great awakening. You know, to steal a religious term, of the people, and they just realize what the Republicans are doing to them. I mean, it's just, they just do it right in your face, and they don't even realize it.
Well, first of all, I try to read across the spectrum a little bit just so that I won't be completely trapped inside the progressive bubble. It's a very tiny bubble after all, Jim. But I don't see a great groundswell of Merca hollering for the TPP. I mean, I don't even see that over on the right wing. The birthers, the deathers, the baggers, the booger eaters, I don't see them hollering for it. The only people I see hollering for it are Obama and some mugwump Democrats and a whole bunch of Republicans in the Senate. There's been nothing said to the American people about specific concrete benefits that will flow from this agreement. And enough people have read the WikiLeaks on it to know that the problems with it are significant enough to certainly give one pause.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like signing a deal for a car, and you know, well, let me see the terms of how I'm buying this car. No, you don't need to see that. You know, that's akin to what they're doing with the TPP, right?
Right. And you say, well, okay, so I'm buying a car. Is it really a car, and not a little, and not a hunk of wood attached by a rope to a goat? Well, we can't tell you that.
Well, I can go that far. I'm just saying, what do I have? 12,000 mile guarantee? Do I have it? Now you don't need to worry about that.
No. I think my analogy works, Jim. We're not even sure it's a car. A brand new goat.
Goat power. It's the future. It's right behind solar. And you get milk too.
Yeah.
Goat's supposedly better for you than cow's milk.
Nanny goat's milk. It's very sweet. Right.
Yeah, it's just... when you said that, because I hadn't... Well, I only caught... I was busy today, so I didn't really... I wasn't really watching, a whole bunch of the news and stuff. I mean, I saw some stuff on my phone, but...
Well, I popped into the Malloy chat room for a few minutes last night, and there were some people in there who were celebrating the demise of Fast Track, and I just said, whoa, wait a minute. Oh, Sparkle Pony, stop it. This ain't over.
Yeah, it was really too easy the way it was like, it's not dead yet. Because that's what I think I saw last night. It's not dead yet, but this is a serious blow. And then I turned on you today because I didn't really hear or see anything until I just got home. And then, you're writing on, and correctly so, that, yeah, it looks like it's going through. And it's like, I guess the only hope is burn. Well, I guess Sanders gets in, they can just pull out of the deal, or
what do you mean?
What's the deal with that?
Once it's done, it's done.
Jesus,
you can't unpeel a grape. You can't unring a bell.
So once you sign that deal, you can't change that deal. You can't just say, "Oh,
well." I mean, if you get all the signatory nations together and go through a great big expensive monumental round of renegotiations. But hell, who's going to want, which of the plutocrats are going to want that? It's all the, I mean, really, we're going to all this trouble over a trade deal with fucking Brunei?
What about the other countries that are signing it? Is it good for them?
Do you realize Mexico? I mean, we've already got NAFTA, right?
Yeah.
North American Free Trade Agreement, Canada and Mexico. Well, Mexico is a signatory to this deal, too. I guess Mexico wants to sign off and send the jobs they got from NAFTA to fucking Brunei.
Yeah, this is just...
And you know what? I want to be a little bit fair. this might be the most awesomest unicorn sparkle pony helium pants filled trade deal ever in the history of trade deals. I mean, it might just glow with awesomeness. But the problem is, we don't know. Because we're not allowed to see it. I mean, we complain, by analogy, Jim, we complain enough about what happens in our electoral process in Novembers. Because by the time you get down to November, you got somebody you really hate versus somebody you can barely stomach. And you're sitting there thinking, man, you know, I just would like to vote for somebody I really respect, but I don't get to because that's the nature of the system. But at least on the ballot in November, Jim, they tell you two names. You know, say Jebby versus Hillary. John Ellis Bush versus Hillary Clinton. At least there's a couple of names. It was, you know, Bishop Willard Romney versus Barack Obama.
Think positive, it could be.
Right. But see, the thing with the Sanders. TPP, it's like going to the polls in November and all you see on the ballot is yes or no. You don't know what the question is to answer yes or no to. We have no goddamned idea what's in the agreement.
So now they're getting Kafka-esque. It's like the story of the trial. You don't even know what you're charged with.
Right. I mean, come on. Wouldn't you like to have a shiny new Trans-Pacific partnership? I mean, doesn't it sound cool? I mean, you want one of those, right? Sure you do. Here, let me sign your name for you.
You know, just put an X. That's all you got to do. Put an X. You're sorry.
And I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm not that gullible. And I'm,
yeah, but so many people seem to be.
Well, I don't know that, Jim. I mean, I'm not seeing a lot of people out there hollering, man, if we get this, it's going to be Frisbees and wheat checks for everybody.
Yeah. Well, see, I mean, it was the reason I brought that up. I mean, I haven't talked to my two brothers in a couple of days or whatever. But I'd be curious to see what their take on it would be. Because one's conservative, one's kind of liberal. And probably a conservative since he's already made his money. Even though I think eventually it might have hurt him or one of his offspring. He probably won't see anything wrong with it. And then kind of liberal one, he's probably too busy keeping up with, you know, just his caseload and stuff. You know, trying to keep a roof over. You know, he's doing all right, but can't slack off in the law biz. I mean, you were in it for a little bit, right? So he's just so busy keeping up with his law business, you know, trying to keep his job and stuff. Not that he's in danger of losing it, but, you know, trying to keep up with his cases and stuff. But I don't think he would have anything negative to say about it. Maybe he would, because he seems to be apolitical like that. I'm talking about the quote-unquote liberal one. Well, it can't be that bad. It's like, I feel like almost, you know, reach through the phone and shake him. I mean, bad things happen. I mean, you know, I could start with JFK and go back for that and,
well, it's like one of the arguments of President Obama has made about the TPP is that he thinks it's unfair that everybody keeps comparing it to the shitty things that happened when we got NAFTA crammed down our throats. And he says, I think this agreement should be judged on its own merits. Well, fine, I'm with you.
Show it to us.
Show it to us, and we'll judge it on its own merits. But the American people,
even the teabaggers, who are not known for their intellectual force, are not prone to buying pigs in pokes. I mean, I use the yes or no on a November ballot. That's not really it. In the chat room, it was pointed out a little bit more accurate, maybe a little bit better analogy. Let's say you go to the ballot and it says, do you want bill number one, bill number two, or bill number three? And then there's no description of anything below any of that. You just pick a number.
Right, it's like applying for a job and you didn't know anything about what you're getting paid, what the hours are,
right,
or anything.
Yeah.
Man, that is so freaking insane. And then of course the corporate news media just doesn't take a side at all. Or I guess they're more. I would guess in their heart of hearts they're for it because they think they're going to still be. They probably will for a while. Still be making big salaries and all that. You know for dishing out the crap to the people, so called news, and they'll just. I don't know. When I read, when I look at something news-wise on TV or radio, I hear on the radio, I judge it for its content, and its truthability, if there's such a word. But it seems like I expect politicians to lie, It seems like most people and the powers that be to do that, We didn't get in this situation by accident. It's been happening for a long, long time. But people just don't seem to wake up. I mean, I don't know. I'm just kind of befuddled that people can't see it.
And I guess my befuddlement, Jim, takes the form of me being absolutely amazed that anybody thought that vote yesterday meant anything.
Count me in. I thought that meant at least some little fight, and it might last, delay it for a month or two. Maybe somebody, a group of Republicans, or well, who am I not? A group of people would wake up and smell the caffeine, but I guess they won't. This is definitely down the road to third world. I mean, we're already 2.5. We're not that far from the third world now. Numerous points of that. Like jobs that used to pay so much, now they pay a third less or a half less, Like what they did to the auto workers when they bought out all the old auto workers' contracts. And then, you can come work for Ford and GM, but this is the new deal. You're getting paid a lot less and your benefit package. And then they play one, and I don't have to tell you this, or most of your listeners, those auto workers are getting paid the equivalent of $51 an hour. Okay, that's fine.
Am I supposed to be angry about that?
Yeah,
I'm happy when American workers make good money.
Yeah, why don't you tell me what the quote-unquote CEOs, CFOs are making, and why don't you cut their salary down? And then that's $51 an hour. Maybe you could spread it out. But, it's just frustrating. But it's just like I was saying, Seattle's got that $15 wage thing. I'm all for it, but, definitely for increasing the minimum wage, but they'll find a way to, get that out of you. I don't know, it's almost got to be some sort of awakening. I mean, my spiritual moment. Let's say, it's church Wednesday.
I'm just a little flummoxed because I'm sitting here, I went and looked earlier, and I'm looking again. I just Googled Elizabeth, because you'll notice that Politico story I read had no reference to Elizabeth Warren in it. Okay?
Right. Yeah, you mentioned that.
And so I just Googled Elizabeth Warren TPP Fast Track, and then I clicked the news tab. Let's see, 10 hours ago, Morning Plum, Fast Track will empower GOP President McConnell says. Let's see, one day ago, Senate to hold key vote on Fast Track trade bill. Progressive group slams Obama on free trade. Senator McConnell, Reid, and others on presidential fast track authority. And there's no, where, I mean, did she just disappear? I mean, I would think being the most visible opponent of this deal would mean that maybe some for-profit media outlets would reach out to her for a response on this on this side deal that was reached to bring Fast Track back to life.
At least they have a little story to go.
I mean, wouldn't you think that?
Yeah, just like I would think. Well, okay, we'll get a story, and then we can kind of try and turn it against her. You know, crazy woman. No.
Okay, so this story was breaking this afternoon, and I just went over to Elizabeth Warren's website. There's her Twitters, nothing. Her tweets. Let's see, Senators Warren Lankford introduced Truth in Settlements Act to make federal agency settlements more transparent. Okay. Senator Warren launches investigation of rewards and incentives offered to annuities dealers advising retirees. Senator Warren highlights Republican budgets damaging yada yada middle class prosperity project yada yada. There's nothing there about her response to this deal in the Senate today. I mean, did somebody put a pillowcase over her head and chloroform her and drag her and drag her off to a basement somewhere? Now, on the other hand, if you want something that's absolutely, utterly meaningless, the New York Times has a story today. President meant no offense in calling Elizabeth Warren by her first name, White House says. Well, goddamn, okay, I feel much better about it now.
Well, I'm glad they're attacking the big stories.
I don't know.
I don't see anything good coming out of this. I was thinking maybe there'd be some sort of, because you usually give that special Uncle Bob liquor. what is that?
Uncle Bob, you were corn liquor. You betcha, didn't it?
Snatching defeat from the John Cake tree. I was hoping maybe the Democrats are kind of waking up, but apparently not.
If you see anything, hear anything, here's another news story. Too big to fail banks are still around, but Elizabeth Warren and David Vitter plan to change that.
All right, I'll let you know.
All right, do please, because I'm kind of perplexed now, Jim. Later.
You and me both.
Bye now. Our buddy Jim in Denver. All right, I think we've got Bill. Hey, Bill.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, you're right on the head with the stuff you were talking about Catholicism, because I, as a young kid, I went through it pretty heavy. I mean, they dumped me in a Lord of the Flies Catholic children's home because my mother had an illness, and the only thing I learned out there was how to fight. How to play baseball, you know, and a few other things. But and some of those nuns we had were, there's nothing like a midlife person, you know, going through the menopause and never having used anything before, theoretically, never having used the situation to what we would consider normal, you know. And luckily for me, though, the priests we had were good people. They were that guy used to steal beer out of their garage, the house they lived in, and steal a beer now and then. Like, as a young kid, I was adventuresome. I had to try everything, you know. And but it's so different today. It's those bunch that want to go back in time with the Catholic Church. I just. It's an abomination. There you go. That's a good biblical word for you, Bob. And I don't know. Who is this character, by the way? Oh, Malachi Martin. You mentioned him. He used to be on the overnight show a lot. I don't know what world he was living in either. I think he was. Did he cast out a lot of demons and things?
Honest to God, I don't know. You've heard of his name before. I haven't. He was a new one on me, Bill.
Well, I heard an awful lot of the all night show when the guy from Trump, Nevada, was running it. And what does he believe in? The thing where you can see the future. You can come up with the future ideas. Because, just one of those things that...
Visionary?
Yeah, but we had a church here that I went to, grade school church, down near the projects downtown. It's gone now. It's all Tri-C Community College bought that whole piece of land, you know. And people down there were fighting to save the church, Bob, and it had a mysterious fire. We had a lot of mysterious fires in University Circle. Whatever UC University Circle Incorporated wanted and the people wouldn't sell. Gee whiz, look at that, you know? And the building right across from the Eagle Tavern had been a big factory, big Ford factory. They built the Ford Tri-Motors down there.
The
planes?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were the ones that used to hop from Lake Erie out to the islands, you know, and we had an old car museum that was still superb if you ever want to see some old metal. And my piano player and I were discussing the fact that both of us remembered there was some old lady in the neighborhood who drove a Baker Electric, Bob.
Holy cow.
They were a funny looking thing. But I saw, on my fact, my piano player, he inherited a 1940 Chevy from his aunt when he was going to Cleveland Institute of Art. And he was a great Dixieland player, too, this guy. But he still is, for that matter. And because he's busy. This is graduation time down there at Case Western, and they have to bring the old man out of retirement because he used to run the whole photo establishment down there, you know. And so they have to call him out of retirement to come in. They don't want to hire anybody, these companies today. They want to hire, for instance, they hired a whole bunch of, they got rid of all their cleaning staff and brought in some freelancers to clean the place. And Bob, some of these people cleaned it all right. Ability to walk, office machines were walking. This is what you get when you hire a bunch of people who are not really employed by these companies. They pay them a lousy wage.
They're contract labor.
Yeah, contract labor. They used to have they had no contract labor south of the Mason-Dixon line, didn't they? Once upon a time.
I think that's one way of describing it.
Yeah, my aides are all African American women, and they're just shocked by how much I know about cultural stuff, and I grew up as really close to it. And I talked to one of the guys in the neighborhood today. We were talking about what it was like growing up down there, come to think of it, I'd rather have been. If I had gone to a suburban, lived in a suburban neighborhood, I would have been probably a history teacher of some kind or the other.
Yeah.
And been comfortably retired now. And But when you're talking about the Catholic Church, I saw that stuff so close. The old church before, who was it? Who was the one that made the big changes? Was it John the 23rd?
Yeah. You're talking about Vatican II?
Yeah. And of course, the one we had, the German anti-aircraft gunner.
Yeah, Benny the Rat.
But on the other hand, as far as he's concerned, in Nazism, you have to understand a little bit about the Hitler Youth movement. And like my buddy whose father was a submariner for the Germans, he told his son, he said, look, it was either that, join the subservice, or go. Now, that's a decision for you, Bob.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah,
and of course, the explanation that was given, Bill, when Benny the Rat was elevated to the throne of St. Peter, was that, you know, he was just a kid, and everybody had to be a member of the Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
So
we talk about popes, was Pius the 12th, who was pope when I was a little one. There was something with him and Hitler and Jews. Yeah, he was involved in some things that were shady.
Well, an enabler.
Yeah. Of course, I suppose with Uncle Adolf, well, there wasn't much you could do one way or the other. But, yeah, you hit it right on the head tonight with it. Because it was a religion. It should not be a lifestyle. My grandmother, my mother's mother, quit the Roman Catholic Church, pulled her kids out of school because the local guy, the local Monsignor or whatever he was always berating the people for how much money he wasn't getting from them. And my grandmother said, hell with that. My grandmother was the one that my mother said sat and cried when the news of the Holocaust hit. She left Germany in around 1900. This was 1945, you know. She was dead before. She died in 47 to 48, uremic poisoning.
Ooh.
Not a good
nope.
Kidney problem.
Yeah.
That killed one of Clark Gable's wives died from the same thing. But I'll tell you about these old radio shows. You get a look at how people were thinking. And the one of them, they talked about Lebanon, the capital of Lebanon.
Beirut.
They called it Beirut. Beirut.
Yeah.
In those days.
Yeah.
Amazing how things change, but I won't go up the line, but, yeah, I mean, I know our friend from your neighbor, he's a good Catholic, but, you know, I was not a believer after so many years, and the whole, you know, the only time you see me in church anymore is when there's a box in the middle of the, with one of my relatives laying in it, except they are all there by now. I would be next if I believed in that, but first of all, I can't afford it, you know. You want to talk, well, the life of Riley, there was a character, Digby O'Dell, otherwise known as Bendix used to call him Digger. Digger O'Dell, the friendly undertaker. And whenever his bit was ended, this undertaker, he would say his exit line was, I'll use his exit line, I must be shoveling off. Stay out of trouble. Enjoy the rest of the evening. I know I'll have my ears plastered to the headphones because I keep it as quiet as I can in this place. In fact, I'm trying now to get an amplifier set up so I can play a little bit more because I miss the hell out of playing the damn thing. I mean, it ruined my life, but at the same time, it made my life. So it's like a microphone that you sit behind and talk. And you had some connections with somebody from Sun Records, didn't you?
Sam Phillips owned Big River Broadcast.
Yeah.
And I worked for Big River.
The guy that owned Sun owned a record, owned some stations, too, I think.
A bunch of, several stations. I don't know if it would qualify as a bunch. But
because before he was a big rockabilly guy, he was a big, big blues record producer. And one of his guys was Ike Turner. Was a player and a scout for Sun. He brought a lot of people into Sun Records, and it was a big label in his day. And of course, RCA they paid him a fortune for Elvis Presley's contract, because Elvis was on Sun. Jerry Lee Lewis was on Sun.
Carl
Perkins was on Sun. Yeah, Bob, I can remember when that stuff hit the radio, and I'm going, what is this stuff? The other thing is the crime novels. I'm working on a Hammett, and this guy was so ahead of the game as far as the social fabric. I guess when you work for the Pinkertons yourself, you saw it up close and personal. And the Continental Op was based on the guy who ran the Baltimore branch of Pinkertons when Hammett joined. Hammett's nickname was the Shadow Man. They say that Hammett could follow a drop of water from San Francisco to China and never lose sight of it. So with that little bit of wit and wisdom, I'll let you go.
All right, Bill, you have yourself a good evening. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. Let's run over to the Gizmo line where I suspect we have John. Is that you, John?
Yep.
All right, loud and clear.
You guys have been just going out of your way to irritate me tonight, haven't you?
Well, it's the least we could do.
You had Dr. Bill on earlier, and I caught a piece of that. And then, all this stuff, and I began to think maybe that the country, we need to, cancel our warranty or something, because...
Well, it's like that disclaimer in all the ads. Your experience may vary.
Yeah. Well, let me, if you don't mind, let me add another something into this little TPP hootenanny. Now again, it's, largely dependent on, which websites and WikiLeaks and all the different groups that have gotten bits and pieces floating around. But there is a provision in there that says that while the overall rules and stuff can be understood once it's actually voted on, specific particulars have a 4-year window that they cannot be publicly released for 4 years after.
Wait, hold on, stop. What? So even after the thing gets voted on and it's passed and it's the treaty level law, we still don't get to see it?
No, well, you might get if Mrs. Baker's on or whoever's got access to the computer, they can verify this, because I've gotten it from a couple different places, but I don't have the machine in front of me right at the moment. But one of the things that we're talking about is that due to what is the polite term, proprietary information, certain details of the various parts of the agreement, such as the intellectual property rights argument and the and things like the tribunal arguments that we've talked about a little bit before, some of that stuff actually has a window that some of the specifics like who's on the boards of these tribunals and stuff like that cannot be revealed for 4 years until 4 years after, I guess, so that they can't be, quote-unquote, influenced or be known about. Kind of like the FISA court thing, where we don't know the judges that are sitting on the court is not public information. Things like that. It made for some very interesting reading about a week and a half ago. Some of the WikiLeaks and what have you coming up with some of this stuff. And in answer to, I think it was, what was it, Jim, I think, asked about the fact, like, who's actually supporting it.
Yeah.
Well, the only people that are supporting it are the corporations and the wealth class, the investor class.
Oh, I'm sure Wall Street is absolutely wetting itself. Hedge fund managers are probably running out of Kleenex. They're so excited.
Yep. They had a little.
But John, my point was that I don't. Go to right wing websites. Go check in with the baggers, the birthers, the deathers, the ninthers, the tenthers, the booger eaters, the birchers, libertarian. And nobody's saying, golly gee, we gotta have this. Because see, even the dumbass bagger booger eaters like the crummy ass jobs that they still have and don't want to be unemployed. And there is a sneaking suspicion that the TPP will result in what few manufacturing jobs we have leaving. I don't give a good goddamn what that goober from Nike said.
Yeah.
I'm going to create 10,000 jobs right here in the new United States of America.
Yeah, 10,000.
No, no, no. Because, see, the only thing that would have swayed me on that is if he said, every job we have in China and Vietnam is coming home. Then I would have said, well, that's pretty serious now, isn't it?
Yeah, but that ain't going to freaking happen.
No, because you got 10-year-olds working for 60 cents a day in sweatshops in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, we still at least nominally have laws in this country that prevent captains of industry from employing children at 60 cents a day.
Yeah, and as I was getting ready to say, Vietnam had a small small protest about TPP, and the police, I mean, they went with the billy clubs and the riot gear and stomped them some serious Vietnamese ass. The powers that be want this, and they want it bad. You know, one of the things about it is everybody complains about NAFTA. NAFTA only has about 12-14% of the American economy.
TPP is 40.
Exactly. TPP is 40 plus. And the trade deal they're cooking up as a sister deal for the Atlantic is going to be another 20-25%. So if they get this crap cooked up, this country's economy is gone. The only jobs will be out there are your quote-unquote information jobs and you can go and, like, I see goddamn everywhere nowadays, be a corrections officer, paid training and vacations and great benefits. So the only jobs you'll have is either being working for the prison or being in the prison.
It's beginning to feel a little like that, isn't it, John?
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. It's like you guys were talking earlier about the rails and stuff like that. Well, if you don't mind, I'll give you a little momentary insight into that. I drive a truck for a living.
Uh-huh.
My job is to take crap from one place to another. Yay. But one of the things that's eating into my job, and talk about adding insult to injury, and of course for safety purposes, I won't talk about the exact company I'm talking about.
Sure.
Company I work for. I just got through. Now, if I have a good day of driving, if I get behind the wheel and I do 400-600 miles, I'll make a living. But the key to that is to be behind the wheel driving the truck, rolling the wheels. Now, if I get, which like happened to me earlier this week, I basically burned 2 days to drive about 40 miles to a rail yard and pick up a load to take to a delivery for the next morning. So I drove I drove 60 miles because I happened to be close enough to it. Oh, it's the cheapest guy. Let me get him up there and pick it up. So my entire day is blown because I'm taking crap that came from, almost 1,700 miles away. would have been a nice run if a truck driver had actually drove it. But because of cost factors and other things, oh, let's stick it on the rail. And like I explained to my DM, I said, you guys don't realize just how insulting this is. And she goes, well, what do you mean? I said, if I do a good day's driving, let's take this load for example, because I know where it came from. I could have drove all day, made me a couple $100. But I'm going to make probably less than $50 and blow the entire day because somebody got by on the cheap and dragged it across the rail. Now, if that's the way y'all want to do it, fine. I mean, you know, you can't, I'm not going to say you couldn't or shouldn't do it. But don't insult, this stuff is stuff that a local driver can do. Some guy who lives in the area, grab him a day cab, go pick it up, go drop it, and get paid by the hour. But instead, they stick it on me because I'm paid by the mile. So aside from a small.
I've never understood that within the general universe, John, of what we consider fair labor standards. Kissing cousin to getting paid by the mile is what happens here with coal truck drivers. Now.
Oh yeah, you pay by the load.
You're not paid by the load. You're paid by the ton.
Yeah.
You see, if you were paid by the load, you would just load the truck to its maximum gross vehicle weight, and away you would go. But but just to give you a little bit of history from a few years back, all these trucks are rated at 85,000 pounds GVW. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And trucks were routinely running at 125.
Oh, yeah.
And people were hollering, wait, this is fundamentally unsafe. We need to enforce the law. Well, the legislature, the state of West Virginia, responding to a dog whistle from the coal industry, immediately jumped right on it and changed the law to 125,000 pounds GVW.
Yeah.
So capitalism being capitalism, what happens after that? If the legal limit is 125,000 GVW, what happens when that becomes the legal limit? Well, they start carrying 140.
Yeah. I used to pull containers I took some time off the road and pulled containers from the rail yard to the ports in Seattle. And we actually watched a guy, and I kid you not, the company I was with had 52 drivers. 46 of them were what we kind of loosely called Russians. They were Eastern Europeans and, et al. And they all come across with their visas and what have you and got their special, the Eastern European American Trade Association would help them get financing for these broken down trucks and chassis to pull these containers. Well, people forget just how heavy hay is, hay cubes are. If they're still nice and wet and nice and moist and stuff, this poor guy goes across the because there's lots of rail yards and rail lines that run between various parts of Seattle, and you'll cross those to get to the port. And we watched this guy happen, and every once in a long while, the DOT will set up a little scale down there next to the port, but they don't do it very often because the port would call the DOT up and everybody would be raising hell and it just would cause all kinds of problems. So the DOT would put maybe once or twice a year, they'd do a little show the flag and then they'd disappear in a couple hours. But this poor guy go across. Now he's got a 20-foot cube and you've probably seen them on the highway. They're fairly small, fairly short little metal boxes that sit on the back of what they call a chassis. Well, this thing was so freaking heavy that it snapped in two, bouncing across the rails. And when they finally cleaned it up, a little 20-foot chassis is only rated to, 75 or 80,000 pounds total. This thing was 183,000 pounds. So they packed it right to the freaking firewalls with hay cubes. And for some reason they stuck them in wet. And the things but because things go by the rail doesn't care. They can carry so much weight. I mean, you're talking multi-million pound train. Not a big deal. Those bomb trains. The Rachel Maddow show had an interesting thing on it, was yesterday or something like that about the freaking trains going by the nuclear missile launch sites. And, you know, I was listening to it kind of a half an ear, but as I started to think about it, I'm going, these greedy sons of bitches, just for the sake of a freaking dollar bill, will go and run those explosive-ass trains within less than 1,000 yards of a missile silo with 10 nukes sitting in it.
Yeah, that's great.
I'm like, can we say stupid? Holy smoke. I mean, like I said, the whole story was kind of low-key, and yeah, it was kind of occasional. But I got to thinking about it, and I'm going, these corporate bastards, are they just not, I mean, is there nothing that they won't do? You know, the whole intellectual property rights and the pharmaceutical things about the TPP, you know, they've got countries in Africa that actually have laws that require that they're required to use the generic medicines for like HIV and stuff like that in Africa. Well, one of the provisions of TPP would eliminate that. And would force these people who are dying of AIDS or malaria and all the stuff that's, you know, in that part of the world, you'd have to pay the top tier price for drugs, just like you were buying it from the United States. And I sat next to a couple drivers a couple days ago from Canada, and we just got talking about things like that. And the man said something that we all know this, but it really hits you when it is said by somebody who lives in another country. And he said flat out, he says, I don't understand it. And I go, what do you mean? He says, you guys are the only people in the world that do not negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for your major health care, for your Medicare and Medicaid. You're not even allowed to negotiate drug prices. What's up with that? And I'm sitting there going, I'm like, you suddenly feel embarrassed about your own damn country. And that is an incredibly sad thing to be.
Well, but a question like that actually is, John, fairly easily answered. And what I mean by that is that, like the prescription it's because the pharmaceutical industry told the elected representatives that they own that's how it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's oligarchy 101.
Yeah. I was like you, I was listening yesterday about all the, everything, MSNBC, all of them talked about, they blocked it, yay. And I was like, no, it's not going to be blocked. They got, they've been fighting, excuse me, they've been fighting down in Texas about the I-69 corridor.
Oh, you mean the NAFTA superhighway?
NAFTA superhighway. Well, I saw an article a couple of days ago that it's starting to get past, you know, now you're starting to see the actual blue sign, the blue-white interstate sign.
Yeah.
Is appearing everywhere along that route now. You know, there's 59 and 70, all the different little, you know, the actual original roads that it's going to work its way through. That thing is now appearing right next to the sign for the normal highway. When these corporate bastards want something, they are going to get it, even if it takes them 10 years, 15 years. They have to pay gobs of money to get somebody out of office. Now, this is kind of tongue-in-cheek here, so take it as it is. But I'm like you. My antenna went up today when I'm saying, okay, they passed that stupid, they made that agreement. And I'm like you. As much as she's been raising hell about it, why the sudden silence?
Well, I mean, I don't want to sound all coast to coast Art Bell, paranoid or anything, but just, I credit that more to the for-profit media that, I mean, you know, this is speculation, okay? This is speculation, John. I can see Chuck Schumer
or Harry Reid saying, now, I'm on the record with you, okay? I'm doing you a favor here. Don't go ask Elizabeth Warren anything about this, would you please? We're trying to get some work done here.
Yeah. But it's, like I said, I mean, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if somebody, you know, they called her into a meeting and said, hey, look, can you ease off a little bit? We've gotten a little bit out of it. You know, we can't stop it. And it's going to be interesting to see. Now, I'll be honest with you. Here, I'm basically...
Well, see, I think I'm willing to think it was more more LBJ-esque, if you will, that Harry called Senator Warren in and said, now, Senator Warren, I think the world of you. It's obvious people really, really like you. But listen, if you don't shut up about this TPP business, I'm going to make sure that, and you know Chuck Schumer is going to follow me as minority leader, we're going to make sure that you don't have any committee appointments more than maybe the federal toilet swabbing committee. Okay, Senator Warren, do we understand each other? I mean, you like being senator, right? Yeah, so you need to shut up.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's just old-fashioned Washington power politics. And see, Harry was never really much into using it on the opposition, but I'll bet you he can pick up a Democrat or two by the ears and give them a shake.
Oh, sure. It's going to be, like I said, if the monkey wrench will really reveal itself if she's silent about it tomorrow. I might be willing to let her get by tonight on it.
Well, I'm just wondering, because I did this kind of journalism once upon a time. You'd go to work, you'd go to the editorial meeting, and you discuss what stories are coming and what you're going to be covering, and then the assignments guy looks at you and says, okay, I need you to interview blah, 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 and blah, blah, and we'll need sound bites and actualities for packages out of that during the course of your shift. Got it? And I go, got it. And so you go in and you get into the Rolodex, and, you know, a professional for-profit media operation has a Rolodex that looks like a goddamn Vegas blackjack shoot, okay? And you you call and you set them up and set them up and set them up and okay, and Senator, we're rolling tape now, and you start talking to them and they give you little sound bites and you cut the sound bites up and you're good. And I just can't imagine the for-profit media not immediately burning up the phone lines to Senator Warren's office. And I'm pretty sure that she wasn't gone on a junket to inspect our troops at Ice Station Zebra.
That's the truth.
I mean, am I just a raving paranoid here?
Oh no!
Or is this all just going to kind of float out later? You know, tomorrow she'll be pissed.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Like I say, tomorrow is going to be the point. If she's silent tomorrow all day, then you know somebody got to her. Or if she comes out with some really soft pedal.
Because the way that Politico story read, I'm pretty sure that Elizabeth Warren's main concern about TPP Fast Track wasn't whether or not we were going to have a duty-free zone for sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah. No. Her, you know, from the interviews that I've heard, one of her biggest complaints about it was just the undemocratic way it was being pushed through. The no transparency, the people don't have a chance to look at it. I suspect that, this is just my opinion, insert caveat there. I suspect that she could have been convinced of it, but she's taken the course that, you know, she's gotten a name for herself as, you know, big populist, you know, anti-Wall Street. That's her shtick. That's her dog and pony show there. And, you know, I would not surprise me a bit if she's in her office right now with her advisors and other people and going, oh hell, how are we going to deal with this? Because, like you said, like I said, one of the two, you know,
when the powers that be want it, they're going to get it. You know, the people don't want it. They hate NAFTA with a passion. I see this all the time out here. You know, one of the few things I can say I agree with the you know, gray coat wearing flag waving Confederates down here is they can't stand NAFTA with a rubber stick. They don't like it. And, you know, you can argue why, but, you know, I agree with them. It demonstrated itself to be an absolute crapshoot of a trade deal. And if this one is coming through with anything like NAFTA, you know, from what I understand, a lot of the provisions in TPP are expanded and refined versions of what was in NAFTA.
And Sparky helped me to understand a few minutes ago what exactly the 4-year thing is. And that is, even if it doesn't pass, the draft chapter remains a classified national security secret for 4 more years.
Yeah. Isn't that lovely?
Well, it's disturbing. I mean, there are elements of this that are troubling, and I talked about them last Friday night as prelude to Friday on the Front Porch, but, yeah. Okay, by the way, we're getting an answer here via our buddy Harry in Baltimore. He says, on May 12th, she was at a Roosevelt Institute press conference in New York City with Bill de Blasio, the rollout of a new liberal economic report plan with Joseph Stiglitz. So that's yesterday. Where she is today, now that they've announced that, screw it, we're going to get fast-track authority, hell or high water, and, you know, votes like yesterday, and it don't really matter. And really, what the for-profit media was, I mean, the New York Times, you know, in stunning vote, Democrats stop fast-track. And I'm sitting there going, no, they didn't. Quit it.
Now, I spent a little time in government service back in the day, and this is the same crap they do all the time. You know, it's the posturing. They knew what they were. They knew they were going to fold yesterday. It was the dog and pony show. Do the, you know, put the token resistance up, get the news cycle to talk about how they were standing up for the American people, and then here it is the next day. Oh, we negotiated. We got some important concessions, blah, 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 da, 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 da. No, it's a dog and pony show. It's, you know, what is it? You know, if you ever watch like West Wing and stuff like that, you get some interesting little, you know, occasional little things that, although are still fake and fantasy, but it gives you an idea of the kind of, you know, wheeling and dealing that goes on. And one of the things politicians talk about a lot is called cover. You got to give me something to cover myself with. You know, if you want me to go with you on this, even though it's not something that I'm known for doing, you got to give me something for cover. And that's what this, you know, this African deal and this stuff, that's all this is cover. So they can go back and say, well, you know, we put a fight up for it, but, you know, it's, we were outvoted, you know. And I guarantee you, I almost will guarantee you that somewhere in the next couple of days, you're going to start seeing fundraisers and stuff saying, well, you know, look at what they've done to us. We need to get more people in the Congress and in the Senate and get the Senate back. Send your $3. This is not but a damn game.
Okay. By the way, okay, so a little update. Thanks to iPie in the chat room. Apparently, Senator Warren appeared on PBS's NewsHour this evening. This particular video clip was posted May 13th, 2015, from PBS's NewsHour. Posted at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. I'll tell you what, John, I'll ring off and let's find out what she had to say real quick.
Cool, let's do that. Thanks.
Right, thanks. Talk to you later. Bye now. Okay, so maybe there's something here. Hey, you know what? I just love queuing up audio from PBS and getting an ad for Allstate Insurance. Ain't it beautiful? Oh, well. But I just want to make sure that we're not getting all teabaggery about all this. But I don't think we are. I really, really don't. Okay, here we go. Judy Woodruff talking to Senator Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts. She is a Democrat who has clashed over this issue with the president. She's one of the leading voices of the left. Senator Warren, we welcome you to the program. So now that they've cleared these procedural hurdles today, is it your concern that the proponents of this trade legislation are now going to be able to move ahead and pass it all?
Well, of course. I am concerned about that because I am very concerned that we are going to pass a trade promotion authority that greases the skids for a deal that is really good for some of the biggest multinational corporations in the world, but not so good for the American worker.
Well, let me just quote. There are many I could quote, but we just heard Senator Hatch say in a couple of answers that that he believes strongly what this is going to do is it's going to, yes, corporations are going to make money, but they're also going to be creating jobs. And this, the idea that the...
God, even Judy Woodruff says it that way. Jobs! You can hear all the Z's, can't you? Look, it's trickle-down economics again. They're going to make horse maggot-gagging loads of money, but then they're going to let some crumbs fall from their table down to... We peons down below, we fellahin, we happy multitude.
Trade agreements of the past took jobs away is just not true.
Well, now, there's a lot of data about what's happened in the trade agreements of the past, and the American worker has not done well. What worries me here is about the whole process around this trade agreement. You know, it has been negotiated in secret. But there have been 28 working groups that have worked on specific parts of it. But those 28 working groups, they have altogether more than 500 people who are involved in them. 85% of those people are either senior executives in the industries that will be affected, or they're lobbyists for those industries. In other words, the people who've been whispering in the ear of our negotiators, who've been helping shape it, who's read every draft and helped mark it up, all represent big multinational corporations, not the American worker. And my view on this...
Can I point out something? And this is just a language thing. And I don't want people to think that I don't like Elizabeth Warren. I do. But can we please stop talking about the American worker as if it is some sort of species of animal? I mean, this is I'm not George Lakoff by any stretch of the imagination, but... Can we say working families in America, working people in America? I mean, can we include the idea that the American worker is something besides a worker, that the American worker has hopes and dreams and ambitions, desires, likes and dislikes? Can we refer to working people in America and not the American worker? I mean, what is that? Laborus Americaniensis. You get my point? Okay, so we know that they didn't chloroform her and stick her in a closet somewhere. That's somewhat reassuring, I suppose. Let's just let her. I'm sorry for the interruption there, but that was the third time she said the American worker. That's like calling people consumers. It's odious and insulting. You'll notice, as I mentioned earlier, that there was a whole New York Times article over whether or not President Obama was rude when he simply called her by her first name. And that probably, maybe that indicates they're buddies. But, you know, that merited inclusion in the New York Times America's paper of record. How about we have a real conversation over whether or not working people in America are actually fully actualized, empowered, human beings instead of laborious Americaniensis?
Is when you have a tilted process, you end up with a tilted outcome.
Well, as you know, Senator, when President Obama has been asked about this, and he's working pretty hard to get this legislation passed, he's made the opposite argument, that in no way is he out there defending the big corporations, that he's looking out after ordinary Americans and about creating jobs for generations to come.
You know, if the president is confident that this is a great trade deal for American families, then the president should let that trade deal be public.
Oh, I feel so much better. We went from the American worker to being American families. See? There's hope.
I agree with Senator Warren. If it's so gosh danged, all fired, red, white, and blue star spangled awesome, let's see it. But let's remember, as a caveat, that were that to happen, there would immediately be scores of outraged cries from the right wing hollering that there are provisions, even if the plain language of the agreement didn't say it, that they were obviously provisions designed to turn America into a Kenyan Muslim socialist wonderland. Mm-hmm. You know that, right? There's no doubt.
Let the American people see it before we vote this week, next week, the week after, to grease the skids, to make it much easier to pass this deal with no amendments, make it much harder to be able to slow down this deal or block this deal.
Well, I know you heard, or perhaps you didn't, but what Senator Hatch was just pointing out is that there's some confusion, that some people may not understand what's going on. The Trade Promotion Authority will give the Congress the ability, an even greater ability, to look at what's in this legislation, and that once the Trans-Pacific Partnership language is available, that it will be out in the public for debate.
Well, that's like saying once we make it public, we'll make it public. The point is, the first vote is going to be to grease the skids so that it will pass with only 51 votes, and that can't be any amendments to it. The trade agreement that we're talking about, the first one up, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is largely already negotiated, and the president could make it public. In fact, I want to make clear, President Bush, when he negotiated a trade agreement, he posted it months in advance of asking Congress to give him even partial trade promotion authority to move this thing through quickly. But I want to make one other point, because I think it's really important, and that is this trade promotion authority is about a whole lot more than just the first deal that's lined up, the one for the Pacific side. It is a six-year greasing of the skids. In other words, the next president, and potentially the one after that, will have the same ability to ram through trade deals. And so when President Obama says, for example, that he refuses to work on a trade deal that would weaken financial regulations, he can't bind the next president. And right now, there's a lot of pressure on the next deal that's coming up with the Europeans. We've heard European officials. We've heard the Republicans. We've heard big financial institutions on both sides of the Atlantic who have all pushed to try to weaken financial regulations. If Trade Promotion Authority passes, it's going to make it a lot easier to do that in the next trade deal.
Well, my understanding.
Ain't got to tell me twice. That was news to me. I hadn't heard the part about how this is going to open the sewer door for presidents down the line. You know, maybe President Scott Walker, who wants a trade deal with the aliens from Norblap 12. And, you know, it's a good thing this is just PBS and nobody watches it. Otherwise, somebody might have seen it and told Barack Obama that Elizabeth Warren just noted that George Dim Leader Bush was more open and transparent about his trade deal than President Obama has been about him. Because if anybody had actually seen this, I don't think he'd be calling her Elizabeth anymore. Mm-mm. No, I think we'd have to queue up. We'd have to queue up like Yosemite Sam and then not pole Frazzleak and right. All right, let's run over to the Skype line and see if Flavio is still there. Are you, Flavio?
Hey, I'm still here. I'm still alive.
Goody, yay.
Oh, my Lord. No, wow, where to begin? Holy. You are one formidable host, I gotta say. But I was just reading all kinds of things, because I'm near blind, 90% blind, but I still can read something, rather. But did you know that the TPP was approved in Brazil in mid-April?
No.
Oh, our Congress just went bazookas over the TPP. Oh, you know.
Time out. Stop. Quit it. This is causing me to have a geographic migraine. Which part of Brazil is the Pacific coast of it?
I don't know. Yeah, I know. It was part of the 11 nations or whatever. Yeah. It was the TPP of thirdization, as they call it. Terceirização. Thirdization. Outsourcing. Outsourcing in Portuguese is thirdization.
What a lovely term.
Isn't it gross? That's... Oh, and I gotta send you the cartoon that Jeanette sent me, my lefty friend from Brazil. the thirdization bill passed in the Congress. You know, and the Brazilian Congress is every bit as can I throw in a really horrible English word that people will be rushing to the dictionaries to figure out that it means whorish? Meretricious. The Brazilian Congress is just as meretricious as the American Congress. You can buy them if you're rich enough.
Yeah, as they say up north, for cheap.
Say that again?
You can buy them for cheap.
Oh, yeah. And then they'll give you even more. You know, it's amazing. The interesting thing is that whereas in the American Congress, the people that go into the Congress already come in rich, and then they enrich themselves further. No, the people in the Brazilian Congress come in poor, and then they, you know, they get even richer, you know.
Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
How's that?
Isn't that how it's supposed to work?
Yeah, I know. It's just, I just want to give a global perspective, because people don't understand. It's a global effort. I mean, okay, let me start really small, okay. It's a bipartisan effort. It's Democrat and Republican. And then when you spread out in the world, it's Democrat and Republican the world over. Doesn't matter what party you belong to, as long as you're in the Congress. You got an in. I know that sounds so awfully cynical, but I was just like,
I was reading the papers today. I was reading about the derailment in Philadelphia. And then in the same French newspaper, Libération,
Libération.
Okay. They had a
mort
dans le déraillement d'un train à Philadelphie. Okay. At least 6 deaths in the derailment of a train in Philadelphia. And then in the same issue, the accident in Philadelphia in 1943, the same place, they had the same accident in the same place in 1943. So what the heck is going on with the infrastructure? Nobody gives a damn. I think there's a damn. Sorry.
Well, look, infrastructure doesn't matter as long as the 0.1% can get where they want to go when they want to go there.
Yeah, we don't want black people and minority people coming up to the north.
When I was in Germany three years ago now, one of the things I was told, I was just sitting there in slack-jawed amazement at their lovely, lovely trains. The intercity express thing that I rode after I got robbed in Brussels, that I rode from Brussels to Frankfurt, you know, skinny jeans skipping, wearing little Belgian bastard. But that inner city express train was beautiful, lovely. It was like riding on air.
Beautiful.
Things got a little bit more dodgy when we got on the getting around Germany train. It was a little more, but it was still orders of magnitude better than Amtrak. You know, the trains in, the train from Roissy to the Louvre in Paris was not bad, but it was kind of dingy, kind of dodgy. But still, orders of magnitude above Amtrak. But my German friends were even telling me then that the German government had backed off on how much it was subsidizing German rail. You know, because of austerity.
I was in Germany in 1988, and it was still West Germany, East Germany, you know. And I nearly lost my cookies when I was going to visit a friend, and I was crossing the border, and I crossed the border. And is Frankfurt or something? I can't remember. But I was going to visit a friend in Kassel, West Germany. And these guys got up on the train, and we're talking snipers, okay? And they trained their weapons on me. And then they asked to see my passport, and I just nearly wet my pants, and I'm like, okay, I didn't, but I felt like it. And I handed them my passport, my Brazilian passport, and they go, okay, it's all cool. But can you imagine? You're on a train. You're just, you know, a normal, you're not a terrorist, you're wearing nice clothes and everything, and you're going on to Germany, and all of a sudden these people, you know, but that was normal back then because of, I guess they had terrorist attacks, the Bader Meinhof or something like that.
Oh, the German terrorist organization, yeah.
Yeah,
the disco bombing, right?
Yeah, they were, you know, so they were like, they were on edge, but they were very nice to me, actually, you know. And then when I told them I was Brazilian, you know, we all broke out the coffee, and you know, we talked about soccer and everything, and
And little did they know that, you know, that they'd beat us 7-1 in the last World Cup. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, right.
No, but
trust the Brazilian. It can be deadly serious, and soccer's going to find its way into the conversation somehow.
Yeah, it's going to find its way into the conversation anyhow. And that's a cool thing. You know, usually they want to kill Americans when Americans go abroad. But when
that's a little bit of an overstatement. I mean,
I know.
I was received warmly in both Germany and France, and I cannot collectively hold the entire nation of Belgium responsible for the little skinny jeans wearing son of a bitch who stole my backpack and about $1,200 worth of equipment, miserable little fucker.
I'm joking. But what I'm saying is that whenever I traveled abroad, you know, it's like they call me the American. And I'm not American. I am American.
I remember during the reign of error of Dim Leader when there was a T-shirt that you could buy that said in all three official United Nations languages, I apologize for the fact that my president is an idiot.
No, but what I'm trying to say is that America is a continent. It reaches all the way from, what is it, Alaska to Tierra del Fuego, you know? And we're all Americans. We're, you know, north, central, and south. But when you go to Europe, it's kind of funny. They call Brazilians and United Statesians Americans. And I'm like, no. I'm Brazilian.
Yeah.
And then we talk about soccer. No.
See, yeah.
You're awesome. You could be the announcer.
Yeah, if only I understood the game, because me calling a soccer match is, and he kicked the ball, and they're all running around a lot, and somebody else kicked the ball. And now they're running around some more. Somebody just kicked the ball again. Somebody fell down. Now they're dancing the Macarena in the stands. Look, someone's kicked the ball again. And it goes on like that for 2.5 hours. And then, you know, no wonder that dude yells goal the way he does. It's the highlight of his goddamn day. Goal! Because he only gets one or two fucking chances.
But that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. That's the thing. It's not a capitalistic thing.
It's very communal. I mean, right down to the communal hooliganism of English soccer fans. Yeah, absolutely. or the communal fascism of, say, you know, Latvian soccer fans or Estonian soccer fans.
Oh, that's good. Oh no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. But
you know, just sitting there singing in Estonian, "We hate every fucking body," you know, and waving their little banners and shit.
No, you're absolutely right. I know. But what I'm saying is that, as far as sports go, you don't need a lot of equipment. I mean,
well, sure, it's a great game. FIFA is
an evil organization.
Yeah, FIFA makes Roger Goodell.
The NFL looks like
the little sisters.
NFL look like angels.
No, the little sisters of the poor. Absolutely.
Oof. Oh, hell yes. No, FIFA. Oh, my God.
I mean, the only organization possibly more corrupt than FIFA is the International...
Vatican.
The International Olympic Committee. No, Jesus Christ, the International Olympic Committee makes the Vatican look like the Little Sisters of the Poor.
I was going to say, no, I as a soccer fanatic, as an asthmatic that actually played, I was goalie actually once, because I'm tall. I'm 6'1", so.
You know, there's one of those little Mexican restaurants like I was talking about last week, over in Somersville, and we'll stop in there sometimes when we're traveling. And they've got like 6 TVs in there, all tuned to different Mexican soccer matches, which is cool. And one of the things I noticed is that those transmissions, everything down there just looks brighter and greener than, and maybe it is. It is after all the Valley of Mexico and the Valley of the Sun and Tonatiuh was the sun and the god, it just looks beautiful.
No, but you know, I think that the
soccer matches in the U.S. just don't look like that.
I just wanted to say that the person that did the greatest service to soccer, and thank him, and he's an Englishman, and I love him, John Oliver. He just massacred FIFA during the protests against the World Cup in Brazil. The massive spending on stadia, and if I ever see John Oliver, I will dry fuck him because he's awesome, because of what he did. And I'm a straight man, but I was like, "Oh, you did not just go there," and he did. And he did. He just nailed it. Did you see that?
Don't
about the protests in Brazil and how. I really thought he nailed it. He really did, because Brazil was in no situation. We have enough stadia. We have the largest stadium in the world, the Maracanã in Rio de Janeiro. Why did we have to build, I can't remember, it was like $8 billion?
By the way, one comment. Pictures or it didn't happen, Flavio. Pictures.
Say that again?
Pictures or it didn't happen.
No, it was horrible. It's like I could not believe the amount of the gobs of money that were spent in stadia. And Brazil is as big as the United States. Yes, it is. As big as the continental United States plus 2/3 of Alaska and Hawaii, as
I
calculated it.
By the way, checking in from the United Arab Emirates this evening, Ron notes in talking about soccer, he says, "Bob, you forgot to mention the incredible theatrics of soccer players. They can be injured from 5 feet away, fall down and writhe in agony, having been touched by nothing more than a mere molecule."
Oh God, that's ridiculous.
This is why I opt for reruns of Australian rules football.
No, I actually,
which I don't
like
even
rugby. I've gotten to like Australian rugby a lot more.
Rugby's awesome, but I mean, I was just old enough to be paying attention when ESPN first went on the air, and all they had was Australian rules football, and so for a while there, we were going to school every morning talking about a game we didn't even understand. But he knocked the living shit out of him, didn't he? God damn, he's about 15 feet up the air. One fella climbed up on another fella's back and jumped up another 15 feet. Another fella come up about 15 feet in the air and just knocked the shit out of him. Damn, that's a game. Who won? Don't know.
That's football.
Yeah, right, but I mean, the best part of it was, well, who won? No idea. Not sure if anybody actually scored.
No, that's the thing. It's like, you know, it's no, and Brazilian football is just so completely corrupt. International soccer is completely corrupt. And
Look, no. See, we can't do this, Flavio, because you have to understand there is a massive injustice underway in America. Tom Brady has been suspended for like four games. I mean, I've this is all I'm going to say about it. I swear, the world is burning down. And just to give you an idea of how stupid some people are, so Robert Kraft, who owns the New England Patriots and is worth some $4.3 billion with a B dollars. You know, the Pats got fined over the
We can match that.
Yeah, well, wait. So the Pats got fined over the deflated football thing, and Tom Brady got suspended. And some Pats fans are so outraged that they have started a crowdfunding campaign, Flavio.
Oh, no.
A crowdfunding campaign. I mean, if you thought it was stupid that the right-wing fundies who wouldn't take shitty pizza to a gay wedding reception and got $800,000 out of that, if you thought that was goddamn dumb, well, there are enraged Pats fans who have started a crowdfunding campaign to try to raise the $1 million necessary to pay the Patriots fine over the deflated footballs. I shit the not.
Oh God, no. But
and then I saw a complaint earlier today about how what an injustice it was that Tom Brady was suspended because he wouldn't turn over his phone, and you know there were questions like, you know, is this America? Would you turn over your phone to the NFL with precious pictures of your lovely family on it, and would you trust them to keep you? And I'm thinking, and what about the Fourth Amendment? And I'm going, God damn, really? I mean, no matter how powerful the No Fun League may be, they are still not the government, and thus the Fourth Amendment does not apply to the No Fun League. Okay. You can contractually hire yourself a super agent. And you can sign a contract to play quarterback for the Patriots, which contract incorporates that you will abide by the rules of the No Fun League. And as a consequence, you can you probably agree that you will participate meaningfully in any necessary investigation which the No Fun League may find it necessary to investigate.
Wow.
So then when they start say, turn over your cell phone, Tom, and he says, uh-uh, ain't gonna. Freedom!
Freedom!
You know, I'm sorry, Tom Brady is not laying there on the rack getting drawn and quartered with his face painted fucking blue.
Oh, my. I wasn't aware of this. I don't follow it that avidly, as you can tell. But, I was going to say that you know, there are some silver linings in dark clouds, I guess. What do you think of the Baltimore Orioles?
Yeah, I'm not an American League guy. Yeah, I'm an
No, but I mean they.
No, I think John Angelos was spot on. And maybe maybe that's because John Angelos is the son of Peter Angelos, and Peter Angelos is a lawyer who made his fortune representing people who had been poisoned to death by the asbestos industry, who spent a couple of generations denying that there was any problem with asbestos. No, come here, Cletus. Here, we'll chop you out a little line of asbestos. Here, let me roll up a $100 bill for you. Why don't you snort that up, Cletus?
Do you remember that game online that what is your hillbilly name? Do you remember? And I'll let you call me that.
Oh, I can't remember. What was your hillbilly name?
My hillbilly name is Cletus.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no. Listen, we're all Cletus now, my friend.
I just died laughing. I was like, okay, I'll take it. I'm a man.
I'm trying to think. I wasn't Bubba. I was like a Jim Bob or something.
You a Jim Bob?
I don't. Yeah, I did. But those weren't very good hillbilly names anyway. I mean, if you want a good hillbilly name, you know, you want something
Cletus
like
Cletus is awesome.
Cletus is awesome. But you know, you want a young Anal Lee or Chlamydia Jean or Precious Little Baby Rosacea. You know, that's some good hillbilly names.
That was phenomenal. Come on, Cletus. Come on. No, but I was reading about the derailment of the Philadelphia train, and just going back to that, and the French newspaper Libération had the presence of mind to mention the fact that the same accident happened in the same place in 1943. So you mean you haven't renewed the railroad tracks in all that time, and we're running on the same trains? Oh, and the other thing, I don't know where I read it, but they don't have seat belts on the trains either?
No.
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 No. Hey, we're running out of time, Flavio. It's been a lovely conversation.
No.
Hopefully we will talk
awesome.
Soon.
And I just wanted to check again just to make sure the mailing address again is in West Virginia, right?
Yeah, The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB.
Eisenhower Drive.
PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801.
What does that stand for again?
Personal mail box.
Personal PMB. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome. Have yourself a good evening, Flavio.
You too, sir.
Go!
Okay, later.
God bless.
Our buddy Flavio calling from the wilds of Fitzwalker Stan. Okie dokie. It's about 8 minutes before the hour, and I want to make sure that we get the appropriate thank yous out. Thanks going out this evening to Brother Pastor Deacon Asa. Brother Deacon, I'm the pastor. Brother Deacon Asa, and to Glenn and to Michael. We started out with a $325 fundraising goal this evening, and thanks to those three individuals, thank you very kindly. We are now down to only $280 to go. About 7 minutes before the hour, so tomorrow evening's fundraising goal will probably be somewhere around $480. Hopefully it will fall a little bit. It'd be great if it all fell overnight. There are bills that have been waiting to be paid. And hey, if they don't get paid, no horn. So it's just that's that simple. Well, you know where the PayPal interface is, and I just gave Flavio the mailing address. If you want to help out, it is help that is badly needed. Let's see. On the way out the door, since it is prayer meeting Wednesday, just one last little bit of fun. Most of the time when Colorado member of the House of Assembly of Delegates or whatever he is, Reverend disgraced chaplain Gordon Klingenschmidt works himself up into a righteous lather, it's over the homosexuals or the transgenders, but he's trying to. But now he's Senate candidate Gordon Klingenschmidt, and he's got a really good chance of being a member of the Colorado Senate. Won't that be delightful? And he's not a one-trick pony. There's all kinds of stuff that he hates in the name of Jesus. And Chappie is particularly worried, well, about all you people out there drinking the marijuanas and injecting the marijuanas. Mm-hmm. In the name of
Jesus. We all know that Colorado did legalize recreational marijuana in 2013. The first shops opened at the beginning of 2014, and also Washington State and Alaska have subsequently voted to legalize some use of that drug. Other measures are going to be on the ballot in other states coming soon. Well, that's the news. Our thanks to Fox News for that inspiring report. Let's take a moment and discern the spirits. There is a spirit of drunkenness.
Wait, I'm discerning. Speaking of spirits of drunkenness, I'm discerning that it's about 4 minutes before the hour, and I'm going to have to partake of communion right after the program. And well, thank goodness that that Brother Deacon Asa has provided the communion tequila. It is, after all, cactus sacrament. It's a cactus sacrament. Anyway, so we're discerning spirits and the spirit of drunkenness. Take it away, Chappie.
That is inside some people. Now you see, I'm not saying the plant is demonic. It's just a plant. I'm not saying the people are demons. They're just people. But in this news story, you see the interaction of the people interacting with the plant and inviting this other thing to come into them. What is this other thing that they voluntarily choose to contract with? It's a demonic spirit of drunkenness. It's not sobriety. It's not holiness. It's not the Holy Spirit. When you begin hallucinating, I'm told, and you begin seeing these images...
Oh, don't pull our leg, Chappie. We're pretty sure you've hallucinated plenty. The thing is, though, you don't have to have any dope to be able to do it. That's just your lizard brain hard at work.
Do you think that's coming from the Spirit of God? No. You're having apparitions, and you are seeing and interacting with and welcoming to rule your heart a demonic spirit.
I just so wish we had a little more time left in the program, because I would like to segue this into Bill Hicks talking about getting one's third eye squeegeed clean, Bill Hicks, the prophet Bill Hicks, peace be upon him.
Of drunkenness. It's not recreational. It's evil. And the Bible says this in 1 Peter 5, this is what the Holy Spirit would say, be alert and of a sober mind. Your enemy, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion looking for someone to devour.
Here. You know what? Chappie's a pretty good barometer. If he says you shouldn't do it, it probably means it's a pretty good idea that you do. Just say it. So that's it for this evening. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you, Lottie and Sparky, in the Horn chat room. Thank you very kindly, our longtime moderators there. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox, who's been a big help in getting the new mixer into line. Thank you. Well, the new old mixer. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACACT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.